With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Life of a Song podcast. This is the first episode in a new and expanded version of the series, which will run every month. I'm Ludovic Hunter-Tilney, the FT's pop critic, and I'm joined in the studio by David Cheel. Hello, David.
Hi, Ludo.
David is the editor responsible for the Life of a Song series, which listeners can read every week in the FT Weekend Life and Arts and online. David also has a long and noble history as a music critic, and he and I today will be discussing the Radiohead song from 1997's album OK Computer, No Surprises. Now, OK Computer, which, as I mentioned, came out in 1997, is the album that really made Radiohead's reputation. At the time, the New Musical Express, reviewing it, described the album as the one that distances Radiohead from their peers by an interstellar mile. Now, David, you've chosen No Surprises from the album. Why?
Well, I was thinking about the fact that Radiohead this year are going to be headlining Glastonbury, and it's 20 years since they were at that legendary performance in 1997, which was the year OK Computer came out. And I was there, so I was thinking back to their performance then and the song, and also the fact that the song sort of, after a while, disappeared from their repertoire, but has crept back in again in recent years.
Now, it's the very first song that they recorded when the sessions for OK Computer began. Can you tell us something about those sessions, how the recording took place?
They recorded the album in two studios over a matter of several months in England, and they were, by all accounts, pretty fractious kind of sessions. I don't think they felt they were being terribly productive, and I think they relocated to get a better sort of vibe. And I think they seemed sort of dissatisfied with the whole thing. And when the album actually came out, they kind of thought, well, the critics are going to hate this. And it turned out the various magazines, including Q magazine, voted it the best album of all time.
And now the sound of the song is very, I mean, it's got a lovely lullaby effect to it, doesn't it? Which perhaps we don't always associate with OK Computer.
The song's placing on the album, it comes as a kind of I think, after Climbing Up the Walls, it comes as a kind of a relief in a way after that. Although, you know, the song itself juxtaposes that sort of beautiful lullaby-ish sort of melody with extremely bleak subject matter. There's a guitar sound in there, which is very much, and I think the band were trying to get this, from Beach Boys' kind of Pet Sounds era, and the Glockenspiel is doing the same thing. So it's kind of pretty and tinkly, but incredibly bleak as well.
So Climbing Up the Walls, the previous song on the album, is sort of about night terrors. It has in it the line about, you know, make sure you lock your children up safely tonight. I mean, I think that it shows someone who's in a sort of state of suspended animation in their daytime. So having had the night terrors in the previous song, it flips to one where someone is living through a sort of waking sleep.
Yeah.
And it opens with York singing in his inimitable way about a heart that's full up like a landfill, a job that slowly kills you.
Yes.
I have one question for you, David. What job do you think the protagonist of this song is actually doing?
It's hard to tell, but I suspect it's something pretty soul-destroying. Tom York said that it's a portrait of somebody who's trying to keep it together but can't. And it's curious also that the song came out in 1997, which was kind of a period of, in this country's history, of relative, I suppose, prosperity. So, you know, you'd think, well, people would be okay. But I think the song's trying to say that, you know, a nice garden, a nice house, a comfortable way of life doesn't always bring happiness with it. You know, internally you might still be sort of raging or just numb.
I wonder if there's another context to it there as well, thinking of the last years of the John Major's government, when the song, which was first written in 95 but then changed a great deal before appearing in 97, was sort of being worked on during the last years of that Conservative administration, which at the time was very controversial for Sleaze. And for John Major's idea of going back to basics, a sort of Victorian morality, which then fell apart because of all the sleaziness. And in the line which he has in the song, "You look so tired and unhappy, bring down the government. They don't speak for us."
Yes.
Other words, I hear there also a sort of dissatisfaction with this idea of a very prim and proper rhetoric and,
yes,
in fact,
exactly,
a sort of very unprim and proper practice.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's right. I think it's sort of reflective of an era of, I guess, distrust in politicians and the political system.
I'm curious about how you would interpret the "and no alarms and no surprises" chorus that runs through. I mean, how do you listen to that? How do you hear that?
I hear that as him saying nothing of any great magnitude is going to happen. This is a life of uneventfulness, of no great emotional highs, no great emotional lows. It's all very much on a kind of an even keel. It's a kind of a dull, numb kind of existence.
It's interesting to listen to it in the present, more fraught era, one of which I think was summed up perfectly by Radiohead's song from last year's album, "A Moon-Shaped Pool, Burn the Witch," a song full of dread and anxiety, which I think does precisely capture the present mood. To listen to this song, I mean, wouldn't one almost want to return to the life of no alarms and no surprises?
Exactly. Yeah, so be careful what you wish for.
And I wonder about wondering about the sort of job that, actually, in OK Computer, York said that was the first album where he learned to sing in personas.
That's right.
In different characters. Yeah. And I mean, I love Radiohead and I love OK Computer, speaking personally, but I find this song carries with it a slight sort of sense of, I just don't think that York has ever had a 9-to-5 job.
No.
And no. His picture of it is bleak, possibly beyond what the 9-to-5 job is able to afford in terms of bleakness.
Yes, indeed. It's an act of imagination, but I guess that's what songwriters do, isn't it?
Let's talk also about the music video. It has an extremely striking video and shows York singing the song from within a helmet, which slowly fills up with water, giving him the strange goldfish-like.
That's right. And meanwhile, the lyrics to the song are being projected backwards, i.e. so that he can read them, but we can't, being scrolled up the visor on his helmet. It's all done in one take, and I guess it captures the sort of essential claustrophobic nature of the song. And there's a bit of, you know, a bit of a story with the shooting of the video itself, because, you know, I for one was sort of taken in by the possibility that Tom York really did hold his breath for that extraordinary length of time. In fact, obviously they speeded up the replay in the studio, so it's a bit of an illusion, but it's a terrifying thing to watch
when he comes out gasping as the water goes down. He's been holding his breath impassively under the water, and then as it goes down he suddenly gasps away,
and it ties in with a moment of kind of release in the song as well, so it's expertly done musically.
One of the things the video brings out is the sense of being in a sort of strange suspended animation between life and death. And the album itself has that, I think, has that same attitude towards technology and its themes that you, as you mentioned, of alienation, where it opens with Airbag, the song which appears to have been inspired by York's car accident that York suffered some decade previously, and he was saved by an airbag. And in that, it seems that both the airbag technology saves the person who is also in an accident because of technology, the car crash.
Yes, and then it goes on to that the sort of Stephen Hawking type voice thing with fitter, happier, with lines like "no kisses with saliva" and that kind of thing. And again, it's sort of painting a picture of a sort of dissociative state of mind or state of being in which technology is sort of becoming more and more intrusive and lives are becoming flatter.
Sleeping well, no bad dreams, no paranoia, careful to all animals, never watching spiders down a plug hole.
No Surprises was the third and last single from the album, reaching number 4 in the UK. The album itself did very well in both Britain and the US.
Yeah.
It was received very favourably indeed in the US in particular. Do you think that there was the Pink Floyd echoes there, particularly carried for the especially the United States audience, where Pink Floyd was such a huge band?
I think definitely. I think Radiohead's roots, they had sort of slightly punkish roots, certainly in terms of their attitude, although not so much in their music. So I think they would probably hate to be described as being a prog rock band, but I think they're extremely, you know, broad influences of prog rock, and particularly of Floyd in a lot of their music, and the kind of widescreen epic guitar sound that goes across that album is extremely, it's very, very Pink Floyd. And also I think it resonates with Roger Waters' sort of lyrical themes with songs like Comfortably Numb. I think they're carrying through that kind of idea as well.
And now, you were there at the Muddy Glastonbury of 97.
I was.
Where they played their very famous headline set, electrifying everybody there present. Did they play No Surprises in their set?
They did. I can't remember what came before or after it, but I do remember it being just sort of a moment of just, you know what it is from the first note. As soon as that really bright guitar sound comes out, you know what it's going to be. And I just remember the whole set as being a kind of a respite from the rain and the mud. You've kind of forgot it transcended the surroundings and the conditions.
It's gone down as one of the great Glastonbury performances. Mm. What would you say, what exactly was it about it? Were they particularly animated on the stage? Was it that the songs really struck a chord at that time?
Something about it came together. I think there's also just that particular moment when Tom York just asked the lighting engineers to put the lights on the crowd. It's a really simple thing to ask, but suddenly I in the crowd, and I think everybody else, suddenly felt, you know, we are here, you know, we felt visible and almost like warmed. It sort of brought us into the event.
So peculiar that an album which is so much, you know, full of themes of anomie yes. and alienation yes, yes. should end up having this exactly. great togetherness yes. in a wet and bedraggled yes. Glastonbury. And there's yes. no more alienating place than a muddy Glastonbury, I find.
No, indeed. Yes, it brought people together in a very beautiful way.
And of course, as you mentioned, they shall be there again this year, headlining.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you expect them to be including No Surprises in their set list again?
I've been looking at the set lists from the last few months. They're touring around at the moment, and they've been bringing the song back in, not every night, but I would expect it to be there, yes. Because it disappeared from their repertoire for a long, long time, and the whole OK Computer thing became a huge albatross, just a burden for them rather than a triumph.
So they went on to make Kid A was the album that followed 3 years later, yeah. which announced yeah. a very startling change in direction.
Yeah.
Or at least at the time it seemed very startling.
Mm.
Why do you think that OK Computer had become this albatross to them? Why do you think they felt compelled to go and sort of undertake this act of reinvention?
I think they realised that they couldn't, because OK Computer had been so lauded around the world and brought them so much attention. And I think they probably realised, or Tom York realised, the only way to follow it up was actually not to follow it up. They couldn't follow it. So I think they just had to do something different.
So having consigned it to their own back catalogue, as it were, I mean, other people were free to do cover versions.
Yep.
And it's had a sort of a slightly raggle-taggle history of cover versions, it seems to me.
Yeah. It's not one of those songs that have been, you know, that people have done better versions than the original. But there are some interesting ones. The Irish singer Luca Bloom, for instance, just plays it straight. He disposes of the guitar riff and the glockenspiel thing and just strums the chords on his guitar. It's a very simple rendition, but very effective.
No alarms and no surprises. No alarms and no surprises. No alarms and no surprises.
So that was Luca Bloom's solo acoustic yep. version mm-hmm. of the song, which, as you say, David, strips away some of the ornament. I have to say, I found it rather lugubrious, if I'm to be critical. I think it must be a very difficult song to cover,
yeah.
in so much as the idea of combining a sort of soothing melody with, as you point out, a sort of disquieting lyric mm-hmm. is very hard to pull off.
Yeah,
Luca Bloom. However, I mean, we can differ. We can differ yeah. on the efficacy. You think that that's a good version?
Yes, I do. I've seen footage of him performing it live, in which it's even more stripped down and probably even more lugubrious. and I think the stripping down thing is the thing that I like about it.
Another version was also a rather stripped down version, Regina Spektor.
That's right. She recorded it for, there was an emergency relief fund charity album, and she recorded just a piano, solo piano version of the song. It's a little bit more ornamented, but very simple. I like what her left hand does on the piano as the song goes on. It sort of subtly builds. The Radiohead version has a sort of subtle building crescendo thing throughout the song, and I think she sort of echoes that, but in a simpler way.
I'll take a quiet life, a handshake of carbon monoxide, no alarms and no surprises.
And so there we can hear a sort of a slow and languidly drawn out version, really, which I like.
Yeah.
I mean, a sense of what surprises might there be lurking amid all of this languor.
Yeah. Yes. It's again, it's simple, but very elegant. And the left hand on the piano is doing that sort of echoing what the band do. So she's sort of almost doing what a whole band do in just with two hands on the piano.
I hear sort of almost as in her version, almost a David Lynch quality.
Yes,
brought
indeed.
Out of a sort of picture perfect prettiness, which is too much so much so that it actually becomes sinister.
Yeah, she's almost sort of whispering the lyrics at times.
A sort of gothic aspect,
yes.
Which is very strongly there in the original.
Yeah.
A non-gothic version. A very non-gothic version is by Postmodern Jukebox.
That's right. This sort of roving jazz collective, they recorded a very strange swing version, an apparently strange swing version in 2016. There's a singer called Chloe Fioranzo who also plays the clarinet. And this is really very jaunty. We were talking earlier about the sort of juxtaposition between the sweetness of the melody and the bleakness of the lyrics. And this takes this a great deal further because it has an absolutely exhilarating clarinet solo and just a sort of an easy, languid swing rhythm. It's beautifully done. I think it's probably my favourite of all the versions.
And another version we have, we veer off again in genre. No Surprises has come up with some quite surprising shifts in style, hasn't it, for its cover versions, with the Easy All-Stars. David, another shift there from the Easy All-Stars.
Yeah, this is the Reggae Collective who've made a speciality of recording reggae versions of classic rock albums. They're the people who gave us Dub Side of the Moon. And they also did an album called Radio Dread, which is OK Computer in its entirety, but done in a reggae style. And it's more than a novelty act, I think. They bring something new to the song. And to the album, there's an old sort of idea that reggae is sort of easygoing, happy-go-lucky kind of music. But I think here they show that it can handle darker subject matter extremely well. And I think they've kind of captured the spirit of the song.
And now we're expecting the band to reclaim it, as they have in their live shows, possibly feeling a curious feeling of wanting to get it back again after hearing these reggae versions and 1940s swing and lugubrious folk. They've been pairing it in their previous concerts at the Coachella Festival in the United States earlier this year, for instance, with sort of more sinister songs, with Paranoid, the likes of Paranoid Android and Burn the Witch. One thing listening to these versions, which Colin Greenwood, the guitarist, one of their guitarists, said in 97 when they were promoting the album, that he said about how much he hated Britpop, which then was still obviously a very big thing. And what he said was, what I really hated about Britpop was all that tiresome irony, as if bands shouldn't be serious things. It seems to me that a song such as No Surprises really brings out that seriousness, which at times they've been caricatured as being too serious. But actually, we should look upon it as it is, as a sort of a song that tries to say something important and succeeds.
Yeah, I think Noel Gallagher famously derided sort of a lot of bands as being what he called bedwetters, you know, that they weren't sort of hard enough or tough enough, but a sensitive streak to most British rock music, which Radiohead are fully in that tradition.
So we shall expect at Glastonbury later on this month to have a field of about 100,000 people singing No Alarms and No Surprises, Let Me Out of Here, as the rain pitches down in tribute to the meteorology of 97.
Yeah. Yes, well, let's hope that climate-wise it's a happier occasion. But I'm thinking back to it. I mean, at the time, the before and afterwards, it was a bit grim. At the time, I didn't care about the rain. It was one of those times when you think, this is the only place that I want to be right now.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.